Okay.
We're rolling.
Can I throw your left at it?
Yeah.
What's the date? August 4th.
That's right. Well, if I remember correctly, we left off with my having been asked to run for a position in the student government of Pali High.
Commissioner of Student Welfare?
It's called the Commissioner of Public Welfare, which is the top of the board of commissioners. There are eight, I think, at least at that time, I think there were eight commissioners altogether. There was public welfare, there was finance, publications, boys' athletics, boys' activities, girls' athletics, girls' activities, and social activity. That's a total of eight. And I was resisting, since I was totally unqualified. But the kingmaker, a fellow named Dick Jennings, kept after me. And finally I said, okay, as long as it's understood that I'm not running seriously. In other words, I began to campaign on behalf of my opponent. And I did some pretty darn good posters saying, vote for Philip Pierce. And to somewhat complicate the scenario, there was a girl in my class, her name was Doris Mosier, who had been a mother's helper at the Anderson summer camps for the last couple of years of its existence, in the course of which she and Oscar had become quite interested in each other. And so by the time that she was a junior, that was my year, Oscar was going to Stanford at the time, they became sort of engaged. It was all very proper. My mother wouldn't have permitted anything else. At the very least, they were going steady. And she thought that I was qualified for this office, and she began campaigning on my behalf, even though I tried to talk her out of it. And she had a lot of friends among the girls, and so things were going along in a sort of inevitability. The next step in the process was a nominating convention at which people were supposed to make speeches on their own behalf, as well as nominating speeches by their supporters. All of this in a general assembly in the school auditorium. I don't think attendance was compulsory, but there was a pretty good turnout. I had never made a public speech in my life. And I didn't know what to say. And I don't know whether anybody gave me any ideas. But there was one thing that I didn't want to have to read a script. So wherever I got my ideas, I memorized them. and there was going to be a time limit. 3 minutes, 5 minutes, something reasonable like that. And the fateful day came, and there was a flip of a coin to decide who would go first. And Philip Pierce went first. I can't remember who gave his principal nominating speech, but that person was able to recite a whole list of Philip Pierce's offices that he had held in the various grades that he went through and various clubs he had belonged to and so forth and so on. And then it came my turn, and I was nominated by this fellow, Dick Jennings. And he was in a tough spot because he couldn't name any of my qualifications. All he could do was dwell upon the fact that I had had a fair success on the track team that year. I think he put it into oratorical terms that I had a smashing success on the cinder path. And then I had to go to the microphone and say a few words on my own behalf. And I can't remember a word that I said. But I do remember one thing, that I ran over time. And I guess they had a timekeeper who said that my time had expired. So I started to walk off the stage in mid-sentence, dragging the microphone with me. And the whole audience thought that was very amusing because nobody had done that before. And so I guess they thought that I was a funny fellow. Then there were a few days before the election itself. My campaign manager, if that's the right word to use, had the idea of putting on a big banner across the main hallway of the school, touting the slate that he had put together of himself and two fellows who were on the track team. All of their first names were Richard. And so his banner said, "Vote for
vote for the dicks,
the big dick, the medium-sized dick, and the little dick."
Oh my goodness!
Well, your goodness had nothing to do with it. The principal of the school ordered him to take it down, which of course he had to do. But it was just as well that he didn't have my name in there with them. Oh, dear. Well, a announcement of the results of the election was going to be made on a certain Saturday night, which was also the night that they were going to have a school dance in the gymnasium. So I guess the voting took place on Thursday, and the incumbent commissioners counted them and turned them over to the school paper called the Campanile. And the Campanile came out with a special edition, which was going to be distributed at this school dance. and it was supposed to all be very hush-hush. Well, I thought it was incumbent upon me to attend that dance. And the only person I could think of to ask was the girl named Jeannie Brokaw that had been my first and only date up to that point at a fiasco in which I tromped on her feet for a few minutes before we both gave up. In the meantime, I had learned to do a one step that mostly just consisted of walking around the dance floor, and so I was a little bit advanced from the last time. And to my surprise, she had not been invited by anybody else, because I had assumed that the time I had taken her to that first dance, all of the local Romeos would have gotten an idea, here's a really good-looking girl, and they would start to move in. But that had not happened, so she was available, and we, on this occasion, I think Oscar drove me to the dance rather than my mother. And as we walked in, they handed out copies of the paper, and the headline read, Anderson Swamps Pierce. And I think it was about 2-1. And it was not a good feeling, but I was stuck with it. And it wasn't a good omen that more people came up to Philip Pierce and commiserated with him than came up to me and congratulated me. So I don't know. The bulk of the people who voted for me didn't go to the dance, I guess. I think my appeal was to the little guy rather than the in-group that really ran the school, ran the student body part of the school. Well, the summer went by and I became increasingly nervous. And as I recall, I had a call from the counselor of our class. Her name was Mrs. Kaiser. And she suggested that I call a meeting of the other commissioners before the school year began and talk a bit about, or introduce ourselves if we weren't already well acquainted, and talk a little bit about what our plans were for the school year and so forth. And I said, well, how do I get in touch with them? And she said she was going to send me a confidential list of the names and addresses and phone numbers of everybody in the high school. So I was able to get in touch with the other commissioners and suggest that we meet at the school a couple of days before the formal opening of school, and that is indeed what happened. And among other things, it was decided to elect from among ourselves a chairperson and a secretary without regard to the offices that we already held. And so the other two Dicks nominated Dick Jennings to be the chairman, and one of them voted or said he moved that the nominations be closed, and so Dick was elected chairman by acclamation, which rather set the stage for the power structure that was to come. The first thing that took place after school began was that another election was held for the cheerleaders, specifically the head cheerleader. I think maybe that person then appointed others. I don't remember the exact sequence, but in any case, there was an election for head cheerleader, and two girls ran for that office. And there was no hard and fast protocol laid out, but somehow or other, Dick Cowdery, who was the commissioner of boys' athletics, nominated himself to be...
I'll be back in 15 minutes.
Put himself on the board to count the votes. And I thought that it was my job as the head of the whole school to also serve on that. And there were a couple of our friends as observers hanging around. So we counted the ballots, and a girl named Florence Wheeler came in second. A girl named Peggy Wilson came in first, and as I recall, the vote was close, but about 10 votes separated the two. And Dick Cowdery, it seems, was a strong partisan of Florence Wheeler. I think maybe they were, in fact, going together. Mm-hmm. So he went out of the commissioner's room where all this was being held. The commissioners had a good-sized private room of their own in that in the layout of Pally High. And people were waiting outside in the hall for the results. And Dick Cowdery went out and announced that Florence Wheeler had won. And the other guys who had been inside the room knew that that was not true, but they had no say in the matter. And I told them that it was not going to be allowed to stand, that we would recount the ballots, this time being extra careful to make sure that we had it right. And it did come out the same, with Peggy Wilson being the winner. So then I went out, and although there were some people waiting who had left, there were still some people still there. And I said that there had been a mistake in our counting, and I tried to cover up for Dick Cowdery. I didn't want to get him in Dutch. Mm-hmm. I said that the in that recount, Peggy Wilson was the winner. And that is the way it went into the school paper and so forth and so on. But Dick Cowdery then took it upon himself to spread the word under the table that I had changed the results because I was a secret admirer of Peggy Wilson, and that I was the I was the one who was at fault. And that was not a glorious beginning of my my position as Commissioner of Public Welfare. Among many other of my problems, was the fact that I had never been given any idea of what the duties of the Commissioner of Public Welfare were. My predecessor was a jock, a guy who was a supremely gifted athlete and had been elected on that basis only, because I don't think he had any qualifications other than the fact he was such a good basketball player and swimmer, and whatever he attempted to do, he was really good. But I never even met the guy, since I was a complete outsider until the very last second. Well, I'll tell you about it. I met him once on the last day of school when I was going around getting signatures in my yearbook. Mm-hmm. I got the signature of Norm Keeler. I guess he wished me luck or something like that. And that was the extent of my knowledge of the job. There was nothing written down anywhere. So I got a little advice from this class counselor I have named Mrs. Kaiser. She said one of the jobs that the Commissioner of Public Welfare is free to do is to organize occasional assemblies. Open-ended, there's no requirement that they be held or how many of them be held, although it's assumed that a person won't have too many. But they are to be of general interest, educational. So that was one concrete thing that she said I could do to carry out the position. And I organized two or three of them during the course of the year, one of which was fairly successful and one of which was somewhat controversial. The one thing that I remember accomplishing that I was proud of I didn't get any credit for, because it came under the general aegis of the PEP committee or rally committee. Before the big game of the football season was the game between Palo Alto High School and our arch rival Sequoia High School, which was located in Redwood City. And we called it the Little Big Game. The big game was Stanford and Cal. Stanford, of course, being right across the street from Pali High. So I had the bright idea of asking a sportcaster from San Francisco, a guy named Ernie Smith, to come to the rally held the day before the Little Big Game and simulate the broadcast of a portion of the Pali High Sequoia High football game. In those days, every sportcaster worth his salt was supposed to be able to visualize an event taking place elsewhere and broadcast a baseball game as though it were taking place in front of him. He would get the bare details over the wire of balls and strikes and so forth. And he had to invent the story. So it would not have been any great trouble for this fellow to do that. But I had absolutely no reason to believe that he would have the time, because he was almost a one-man sportcaster in the Bay Area. He broadcast football and basketball and baseball games. And there was gas rationing at that time, and here I was asking him to make a trip 30 miles from San Francisco down to Pali High. I had no reason to think he would accept, but lo and behold, he did. So I met him out at the curb at the appointed hour, and led him to the source of the outside amphitheater where the rally was to be held, and introduced him to the head of the rally committee, and then I withdrew from the scene entirely. But I thought that was something worth doing. But for the most part, I did not know what I was doing, and made a lot of mistakes. Another one of my bright ideas occurred to me when somehow or other a catalog came. Maybe catalogs of this sort were sent out to every high school in the country. But it had a number of motion pictures listed that one could rent for a nominal fee. And I had the bright idea of providing entertainment during noon hours on rainy days in the school auditorium. I had friends in the stage crew who knew how to operate all the equipment that would be needed. They had a good projector and so forth and so on. So I had the idea of ordering a bunch of what this catalog called classical cartoons. And I had a little slush fund. Each of the commissioners had a little fund, I suppose, supervised by the commissioner of finance. So I dipped into that to order a supply of these so-called classical cartoons. And on some rainy day in the month of December, I believe it was, I had it announced over the school PA system that everybody was invited to the auditorium at 12:30 or whatever for this form of entertainment. Well, it got off badly when there was a problem with focus and the sound. But after the first cartoon or so, those things were worked out, and then the really big problem came out, that these were not classical cartoons in any of the usual sense of the term. They weren't Mickey Mouse and Bugs Bunny or anybody that any of us had ever heard of. Characters like Ronald the Rat, maybe, instead of Mickey the Mouse. Things of that sort. And people began to grumble. And it grew in volume until the whole auditorium turned into a veritable riot. People screaming and yelling and throwing things. And I had to ask my friends in the control booth to shut the whole thing down. And that was the end of that experiment. Oh, I should have read the fine print more carefully. Oh. I had great, great difficulty at the personality level of how to act as student body president, which is what I was in effect supposed to be. I felt that I needed to be dignified and serious rather than the happy-go-lucky kid that I had been during my whole school career up to that point. I felt a failure. I felt inferior. And I guess I tried to compensate by pretending that I was sure of myself, when in fact I was completely insecure. And the business of being untrue to my real self. Just made me into a different person. And my brother told me that. He said I was not the same person even at home. A lot of the people I had palled around with in my previous school years also felt the difference, and I became more and more isolated. And lonely, and I would occasionally try to break out of it by suggesting to some former friend that we go to a movie together or something. And maybe occasionally they would humor me to go along, but for the most part, they didn't have any fun the way we used to. And then there was a real fiasco. In February, around Valentine's Day time, the Commissioner of Social Activities put on what they called a Sadie Hawkins Day dance. Now, I don't know whether you remember the Lil Abner comic strip and the Sadie Hawkins Day, which appeared in the strip every year. But the idea of Sadie Hawkins Day was that it was a day on which the girls in Dog Patch, the location of the Lil Abner strip, were free to pursue boys and to invite them out and whatever. So in this case, it was the time when girls could invite boys to the dance. No girls invited me to the dance until, I guess it was practically the last day for it, or maybe a couple of days in advance.
Okay.
And a young girl from the sophomore class, her name was Dorothy Cowdery. She had been to the Anderson summer camp a few years earlier. She was incidentally the sister of Dick Cowdery, the commissioner of boys athletics, but that's irrelevant to the story. She got a crush on me at the Anderson summer camp. And after some years in between, she thought to act upon it by inviting me to this dance. And she probably must have heard from the grapevine that I hadn't been invited by anybody else. So there it was. But I didn't accept, because I thought, it would be out of place For me to go to a youngster and so I came up with a lame excuse that I thought that I might have a previous engagement with my brother going to a jazz festival or some such nonsense. Mm-hmm. I made up a story. And a day went by until the absolute deadline, and I hadn't bothered to get back in touch with Dorothy Cowdery, because I assumed that when she didn't hear from me, that she would assume I had, in fact, this prior engagement with my brother. But she didn't assume that at all, and she called my mother and asked her what she should do. And my mother really let me have it and demanded that I get back in touch with Dorothy and said I would accept with pleasure.
Okay.
So there I was at another school dance, not really knowing how to dance, and still not knowing how to talk to a girl, but particularly with a girl so far outside of my orbit. But everybody must have noticed and must have known that I was a virtual social pariah to everybody else except this unknown youngster. I don't think that I ever went to another school dance the rest of the year. I think maybe I went to the senior prom, the last event of the year, and it would have been a real humiliation if I hadn't showed up at that. I think I went to that in the company of Doris Mosier, just as a token, because at the time she was engaged to my brother.
Right.
But at least I was there.
This is your senior year?
This was my senior year.
Right.
And I was 15 when it began. I didn't turn 16 until the middle of the year. By that time, practically everybody else in my class was 18. One of the assemblies that I organized consisted of a talk called This is the Army, or maybe it was This is Going to Be the Army, or something to that effect. This fellow was a friend of one of the mothers at the Anderson Nursing School, and she said he was a good public speaker and that he could give the whole student body for that matter, an orientation of what it would be like if they were drafted, which many of them were going to be. So that wasn't a bad idea for an assembly subject. But to my surprise, it turned out that this fellow was something of an ideologue who felt that it was a good idea for the United States to get along well, to get along better with the Soviet Union. And he had a point in the fact that the U.S. and the USSR were allies at that time against the Axis of Germany, Italy, and Japan. But I think he probably overdid it a bit in whatever he might have said about the virtues of the Soviet experiment and the virtues of Uncle Joe Stalin. So that did not turn out to be the total triumph that I had hoped. The one other assembly that I remember that went a little bit better was to put on a program of music by a trio of students, one of whom played the piano pretty well, and one of whom played the drums pretty well, one of whom played the clarinet pretty well. And so they entertained the audience successfully. But by and large, my senior year was a very, very unhappy time. I was totally out of the swim. There was no group that I belonged to, and I was terribly, terribly lonely. I spent many an afternoon going to the movies by myself. And other times I would just go to the library and read books by William Saroyan or whatever. On the very last day, Dick Jennings, the evil genius that I had to thank for the whole thing, got me to one side and said, "You know you screwed yourself this year, don't you, Hank?" And I guess my jaw dropped and I looked at him and at moments such as that, I can't think of the right thing to say. I should have said the whole thing was your idea, Dick. But I guess I just held my tongue, which is my usual practice. But it did change myself from this happy-go-lucky kid that I had been formerly into this guy who came across as stiff and unsmiling and aloof, and some thought of me as arrogant and it's been tough. In fact, I guess it's been impossible for me to ever recapture that carefree, happy-go-lucky kid that I once was. So when I said the other day that I was going to be talking about the biggest single mistake I ever made in my life, some of you might have thought, that I was referring to some of my experiences in the world, in the way of romances. But although I made my mistakes in that area, all right, in a certain sense, I think that what happened to me as a result of my agreeing with Dick Jennings affected those later mistakes and everything else. I think it was the turning point. So, if I had had it to do over again, I would have stayed with my initial reaction was no, no, no. I'm going to take a quick look here to see if I... Oh, well, all right, I've got to... Let me just say... that it also affected my grades. Although, by the time that it got down to my applying for admission to places like Pomona College, I'd already made a sufficiently good record in my other years that when I began getting B's as a senior instead of all A's, they still gave me a very generous scholarship. So that worked out all right. It also affected my experiences on the track team. Because I began sloughing off a bit in practice, taking days off with the alibi that I had business to attend to in the commissioner's office and so forth. But I was, in fact, just being a little lazy, and I must say that our coach was very laid back and didn't notice that I wasn't practicing very hard. He spent most, if not all, of his time on the varsity side of things rather than the lightweight side. He never told me that I should run a certain number of 220s to work on my speed, and run a certain number of 880s to work on my endurance, that sort of thing. He just left that all up to me. So in my senior year on the track team, I did not do it all well compared to the first year as a junior. First of all, because I hurt myself in a practice game of basketball, hurt my knee, which kept me out of the meets for the early part of the year. I only ran in one dual meet, and that was against Sequoia. On that occasion, I took it easy during the first three quarters of the race. And then hoped that I had enough left to turn on the afterburner, and in fact that worked. And I nipped the guy from Sequoia High at the tape, and the crowd loved that, but it wasn't a very good strategy. Because I tried it in the league championship where Pally was in with Burlingame, San Mateo, and all those others. I tried holding back until the last quarter of that quarter mile, and my strategy did not work at all, and I came in fourth, and the only saving grace was that when it came to these sectional meet, the Northern California sectional meet held at Edwards Field here in Berkeley, they changed the definition of unlimited and lightweight to lower the limits of the lightweight group beyond what they had been, so that a number of the guys who had come in ahead of me at the league meet had more than the requisite number of factors. They changed the number from 130 to 125, and I still came in under 125. So I didn't have to run against the same guys that I did before. And this time I decided I would use the opposite strategy and go out as fast as I could to begin with, and then hope that I was able to stagger in for the final quarter of the quarter mile race. And it worked out better than the opposite strategy had. I came in second, but I had the experience of becoming so exhausted that I was unconscious of my arms and legs. I didn't know that I was moving them. I felt as I was floating. I've never had that experience before, and I hope I never do again, because I think it does terrible things to the heart of a young kid, which I still was. In any event, I got a second in that and a fourth place in the long jump, which is more than any of the other Pally guys did, either varsity or unlimited. So in a certain way, I did all right at the very end in my athletic career, such as it was. Well, I then went into something that I had been looking forward to, a certain sign of maturation. I was able to get a legitimate job instead of mowing people's lawns for 25 cents an hour, which is all that I had been able to do during summers up to that point to make pocket money. I got a job in a cannery. And in order to do that, I had to join the Teamsters Union. And it was all part of the war effort because we were canning stuff with labels to send the peaches and whatnot to the U.S. Army rather than to Safeway stores. So I felt pretty darn good about that. But my brother and I never fully made up the rift that opened up between us at that time. Incidentally, his engagement to Doris Mosier didn't last terribly long. So when she wrote in my yearbook that she looked forward to having a brother, all she had in her life at that time was a sister, just the way I looked forward to maybe having her as a sister-in-law, but it didn't work out. But Oscar and I have never been really close ever since, even though he lives only a few blocks away. We don't see each other, except at get-togethers at Rachel's place, or occasional picnics organized by Rachel at Tilden Park or whatever.
Wait, so this rift you're saying is the... Just because you, because of the change of your demeanor. And
yeah, he thought I had really become Mr. Know-it-all, and maybe. Maybe he's right. I've tried to make advances to repair the rift insofar as possible, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure it's possible. We're both pretty well established with what we are. I remember an intelligence test that we were supposed to take in the middle of our senior year at Pali High. It wasn't the Stanford-Binet IQ test of infamy. This was a more general test. It had a section on grasp of spatial relationships and so forth. But then it had a number of general questions, one of which I distinctly remember. The question was, in so many words, what should be the principal quality of a village leader? And the choices were age, experience, wisdom, ambition. I knew, of course, the answer that they wanted. any fool would know that. But I didn't give it to them. I told them that I thought ambition trumped everything. A person should really want to be a leader rather than have it forced upon him. And I have never wanted to be a leader. If I had followed my bliss, as I think the expression goes, I would have worked on being the best that I am capable of being as a writer and or as an artist. But I didn't. So that's one of the lessons I have learned in life a little late. Too late. Now, as long as we're just free associating here, off the record, we have a few more minutes before Virginia gets back, and anything you'd like to say?
What do you think I should have done?
Well, what did your, did you seek advice from either your brother or your mother? Or were they aware of, this whole situation? What do they think? I mean, in the election.
I'm sorry, I don't follow the question.
Oh, you mean just, you're saying, what should you have done in your life?
No, I mean, what should I have, how should I have dealt with the blandishments of Richard M. Jennings?
Right, that's what I thought. That's what I'm saying. Did you get any advice or, did you make your mother...
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
She was aware of it. And didn't try to influence me one way or the other. She just said I should do whatever I wanted. She and Doris were very close. I think Doris actually worked for my mother on weekends and various times in the nursery school as well as at summer camps. So I wouldn't be a bit surprised now that I think about it if she were heavily influenced by Doris's claims that I was very popular and that I would make a very good student body president and so forth and so on. I think if I had asked for the advice of my brother, he would have been much, much more cautious. He knew I was basically a very bashful and shy person, and that I would be unhappy. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I asked his advice.
All right.
Are we done?
Yeah, anytime.